Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Charles Hugh Smith. Charles is author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy, Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and Will You Be Richer or Poorer? And his most recent book, Global Crisis, National Renewal, A Revolutionary Grand Strategy for the United States. His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance site. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. It's always my pleasure to be on the podcast with you.
Great. I thought we'd do a discussion today on a number of topics and issues that you've been recently writing about. And the areas have to do with the current topics du jour, what's happening with the U.S. dollar, Federal Reserve policy, emerging market challenges, leverage and debt in today's world with rising inflation, the challenges there. And so I thought we'd begin first with a discussion on the U.S. dollar. So it's been getting stronger recently, causing challenges in the emerging markets, particularly because of the large amount of U.S. dollar denominated debt on corporate debt in the emerging markets, with the dollar strengthening, it's becoming challenging on those emerging markets to scramble to get their local currency to be able to pay their U.S. dollar debt. So they're having challenges there. And of course, you have the Fed, which is applying Federal Reserve policy by raising interest rates, making the currency stronger, and thereby causing these challenges in the emerging markets. Why are they making it stronger? Well, they're looking at trying to reduce the effects of rising inflation on consumers, consumer price inflation. So the thinking and the strategy is that by raising interest rates on the U.S. dollar, even though the dollar gets stronger, commodity prices hopefully come down, asset inflation hopefully is contained or comes down, and that ultimately translates into lower or contained consumer price inflation. Your thoughts initially on that?
Yeah, thank you, Richard. I have tried to think carefully about currencies and their effect, you know, on economies and our everyday lives over the years. And so I really appreciate this topic. And so I'm going to hit like three points here. And when we talk about the emerging markets and the dollar, we have to remember that why would somebody borrow debt that was denominated in dollars? And the reason why was the dollar was weakening for years. And so that made sense, because if you borrowed in dollars, then and your currency was strengthening against the dollar, meaning that that meant that you would actually have to pay a smaller sum every month. As the dollar lost value, your currency gains in value. So your payment on debt actually decreased as the dollar weakened. Now that same dynamic has reversed, and now you're having to come up with more of your local currency, or more euros, more yen, whatever, to make that payment. And so now it's crunch time. It was a great strategy when the dollar was weakening. Now that it's strengthening, it's costing everybody that borrowed in dollars a lot more. And so that means that in a way, what the stronger dollar is doing is exporting inflation to the emerging markets, because their currency now buys a lot less than the dollar, you know. So that's where You and I, before we started recording, were talking about the Triffin dilemma. And the point of that Triffin's dilemma is that a reserve currency like the dollar or the euro or the yen, it is it's trying to do two jobs at once. And there's always a tension between that. It's trying to serve its domestic economy. As you said, the Fed is trying to raise interest rates to suppress inflation in the United States, the domestic economy. But it also plays a global role. And so the global role of any reserve currency is you've got to provide enough of your currency out into the global economy for it to function as a transactional currency, and also as a reserve currency that you would hold as a store of value. So you're constantly having to export more of your currency. And so the dollar, for the dollar to remain a reserve currency, the Fed has to, the banking sector has to generate enough dollars to satisfy the needs of the global economy. And so, you know, what was happening when the dollar was declining in value, there was great demand for dollars to borrow in dollars, because it was, like we said, a good deal, right? Your payment was going to go down in your local currency. Now that's reversed. And so there's a demand for dollars, and yet the Fed is holding back. It's not creating as many dollars as it did before. And so now there's a dollar shortage, which is one reason why the dollar is soaring. And it's creating a lot of, as you say, chaos, and not just financially, but, you know, in the domestic, social, and political realms.
So that's, I guess, the Triffin dilemma now happening in reverse, would you say, because the, you know, there's not enough dollars being exported globally, and at the same time, you have a strengthening U.S. dollar currency. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, that's right. That's what's happening. And so I proposed in one of my articles, recent articles on this, was that the Fed never talks about the global role of the U.S. dollar and the impact that the Fed's policies have on the global value of the dollar, you know, because as you and I were discussing before we started recording, a big part of any reserve currency is its bond market. Because when somebody says, well, I'm going to buy some U.S. dollars, what that typically means is they're buying an asset that's denominated in dollars, like a U.S. treasury bill, you know, so that your currency isn't just sitting out there in cash, although you do have to print enough cash, right? And that's why there's, you know, a couple trillion dollars of U.S. cash around, because that's also part of what local markets use cash, you know? So, but the bond market has to be large enough to support the demand for the currency as a reserve currency. And so that's one of the requirements of a reserve currency, right? And so the point here is that the U.S. seemed to be pursuing a policy by printing a lot of dollars and keeping interest rates at zero. They were pursuing a policy that was effectively weakening the dollar globally, right? The dollar was declining compared to, you know, the yen and the euro are stable. And so now, by raising interest rates and reducing their purchase of bonds, they're actually pushing the dollar up just by supply and demand. And so I think that this is such an obvious consequence of the Fed policies that they know exactly what they're doing. And I think that I would propose that they're sacrificing the emerging economies and other economies, what I've been calling the periphery, to protect the U.S. economy from high inflation.
Yes. And you've also written a lot about the reserve currency, what makes a reserve currency, the characteristics. You mentioned there's a lot of people out there that, you know, see the potential for other currencies to become a reserve currency, but there's a lot of challenges in that. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, thank you, Richard. You know, there's been a lot of talk, and a lot of people are very enthusiastic about the BRIC economies, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and other emerging markets, creating their an alternative reserve currency, and as an option other than the dollar, I applaud the effort, or I'm in favor of a multitude of currencies, right? I think that as long as they're transparent and the price or the value of each currency is discovered by the market, then I think the global economy would be strengthened by having a variety of currencies. But the requirements to have a true reserve currency are really, the bar is set very high. And so you can't just say, okay, we've got a reserve currency. No, that's not the way it works. Because remember, the way a currency becomes a reserve currency is people have to decide that it benefits them to use that currency for transactions and to own it as a store of value. So you can't just impose a reserve currency on the global economy. You can't do it by force. So you have to make it very stable, very liquid, very transparent. And only then will you get people who with serious money will say, okay, I trust that because I trust the market has discovered its price. So here's the problem with a currency, a reserve currency. You've got to, number one, it has to float freely in the global marketplace. You can't have it pegged to something else. So when people tell me, oh, the renminbi is going to be a global reserve currency, it's like, no, it can't be a reserve currency until they unpeg it from the dollar and it's allowed to float freely on the global marketplace. They also have to issue bonds, you know, like we said, in size. You know, in other words, there has to be like a multi-trillion dollar market for the bonds in order to float the currency on a global scale, right? The other thing is that it's got to be really liquid. You have to be able to trade a couple trillion units of whatever currency is going to be a global reserve currency. You can't issue like 100 billion units and then that's going to be a global reserve currency. No, it has to be such that you can trade like the dollar does, 2 or 3 trillion a day. The liquidity has to be in every asset class. In other words, you have to be able to trade in size, meaning like hundreds of billions of dollars a day in commodities, bonds, stocks, derivatives, you name it. Everything has to be denominated in that reserve currency. Otherwise, it's not really liquid, right? So the other thing is that it has to be transparent, meaning that whatever governance there is that of the currency, the way it's issued, the way it's traded, all those things have to be transparent, meaning that every participant in the market has the same information. So a currency that's devalued by some secret click somewhere overnight, that's not a trustworthy currency, you know? And a currency that fluctuates wildly, like loses 20% of its value over a day or two, that's not gonna work for people that, you know, need a place to park, $10 trillion. So, you know, those are real issues. And maybe 10 trillion is too big, let's say 500 billion. You know, you can't be putting serious money into some currency that's fluctuating wildly or that can be devalued with no warning. And so what you're really looking at also is a currency that has what I call ease of flow. That's kind of a systems language term, meaning that it's easy to buy this in size and trade it, you know, so that it's easy to switch this currency between various asset classes and so on, that it's really easy to use. And so all of those requirements are very steep. And so when people propose like maybe a cryptocurrency, and I myself proposed that maybe Bitcoin could be a reserve currency for small nations, you know, that could acquire some and use it to support their own currency. All of those things are good ideas, but the global scale is so immense now that you need a certain amount of characteristics that people can trust. And so that means it float freely, it has to be transparent, it has to be liquid, and it has to have an equivalent bond market. So if you don't have all those things, you're not going to get a reserve currency because people can't trust it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that leaves the US dollar. Would you agree that the US dollar will likely stay as the reserve currency for quite some time?
Yeah, now we have to remember too that if you look it up, it's like the euro is a reserve currency too, right? It's about 25% of currency reserves, and the yen, the Japanese yen, is also considered a reserve currency. And I think it has somewhere between 5 and 10% of the reserve currency sort of percentage wise. And so there are already those, the three reserve currencies. So it's not just the dollar. I think the dollar is running about 60%, but the dollar is the dominant one. And so for another currency to be issued, that's going to take time, and it's going to take structural changes in whatever entity is issuing that currency. So the dollar looks like it's going to be dominant for quite a while. And it also goes back to the idea that any reserve currency or any currency at all is a reflection of the overall strength and security of the issuing nation or entity. So, you know, it's just human psychology sort of dictates that if the nation or entity that's issuing a currency seems to be unraveling, you know, whether there's social disorder or their economy is declining into recession or whatever, then all of those weaken your currency, not because it just for psychological reasons. People go, well, I think I'm going to get out of that currency and get something that's safe, liquid, transparent. So that the weakening euro, I think to some degree, is not just an effect of the dollar. It's also reflecting people's concerns that the EU is struggling on a macro level. And I think the same can be said of the Japanese yen, which is cratered, which has lost like 20% of its value against the dollar in 6 months. And it's partly a reflection of the concerns that Japan is simply not adapting successfully, you know, to current conditions. And so there's that issue too, you know, that it's a matter of the macro trust in the economy and governance of the issuing nation or entity.
Mm-hmm. So the US dollar still remains as the cleanest shirt in a pile of dirty laundry.
And you know, I get a lot of email, Richard, and I sense that people are very emotionally invested in the dollar dying or declining or being replaced by another currency. And I understand that emotional investment because it's easy to see the value of having more currencies than just one dominant one, right? And so I understand the appeal of a BRICS issued reserve currency and why people want it to succeed. But that emotional, we have to kind of detach ourselves when we're analyzing finance, right? And these larger forces. And so it has to meet certain requirements and characteristics. We can't create it out of whole cloth and think it's going to succeed. And so I think that it brings us around to, well, what's going to happen going forward? Will the dollar remain dominant forever? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, we don't know, right? A lot of things can happen. Because I think we're all aware, as you and I have discussed many times, there's going to be a great reset. And we hope it's a decentralized one, and the powers that be are trying to shove a centralized great reset down our throats. But it's very likely that that the world is entering a period of instability And for me, in my thinking, it's because we have to transition from a waste is growth economy to one that's more rational and in terms of how it consumes resources. You know, it's going to have to be, we're going to have to change a lot of different things, or that it's going to be changed for us. And so currencies are not going to just stay stable while the rest of the global economy goes through like tremendous instability, right? So it seems like, well, what do we do to protect ourselves as currencies, you know, lose value, gain value, and so on? Well, I think the basic answer is diversification of assets and including like hard assets, right? Which you are, of course, familiar with and propose a lot of your proposals are based on the idea that we should diversify into farmland and environmentally sound economic growth.
Yeah, absolutely. So like hard assets, emphasizing and overweighting hard assets versus financial assets, and certainly across the asset spectrum, diversification would make sense, right? To do risk management on the currencies, on the fluctuations and variability of the currencies. So, you know, real estate, whether that's urban real estate or farmland real estate, precious metals, different types of currencies, equities, and bonds. So across all different asset classes.
Right. And then, and of course, small business, if you can own an enterprise yourself that has a niche in the local economy or that provides essential goods and services, I mean, this is, this will always have value regardless of what kind of currency is used for transactions, you know, whether it's cryptos or cash or some new currency, you know, if you're providing an essential good or service, you'll be offered some form of money. and that's really what we're looking for is being able to sell your skills and your knowledge in whatever currency is holding its value best.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great insight, Charles. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
Yeah, please visit me at uptwominds.com, and I have a sample of my new book, Global Crisis, National Renewal, and all my other books if you want to check out some free chapters.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. Really appreciate it.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.